Hearty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA Sunny Young in Washington. Thanks for tuning in this evening. Welcome to the sunny side of sports.
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the sunny side of sports.
Yes, my friend.
The sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports.
The sunny side of sports show.
Great show, bro. This is sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Stand up. Stand up. Stand up.
They'll be standing up at stadiums all across Africa over the next week. More than 50 African football teams will be in action in qualifying matches for the 2017 Africa Cup of Nations tournament in Gabon. In a result from Wednesday, Benin scored a 2-1 victory over host South Sudan in Juba. New FIFA president Gianni Infantino was among the football fans in Juba after he had inaugurated the office for the South Sudan Football Association. Wacky Simon Wudu reports from Juba.
FIFA President Gianni Infantino met South Sudan President Salva Kiir upon his arrival in Juba today. Infantino says he discussed the status of football with the president in the struggling country. The FIFA boss says he also came to Juba to launch the newly constructed office of the South Sudan Football Association and acquaint himself with the FIFA projects in South Sudan aimed at improving the standard of football in the country.
I come back here, of course, as a FIFA president to watch some football as well, but also to kick off a new era of football, a new era of developing football, a new era of football development, which is our mission.
The 45-year-old lawyer and a career sports administrator first came to South Sudan early last month while campaigning to become the World Football Governing Body's president. Infantino vowed to improve the standard of football in Africa, including South Sudan.
South Sudan will be one of the priorities. We will look at the infrastructure. We have discussed it with the government and with the Football Association, and soon will come up with something concrete there as well that the people of South Sudan will be proud of.
Infantino says he wants to improve training grounds and football pitches in South Sudan. He also wants to train more players, especially young boys and girls, as well as referees. He noted that the structure of football in South Sudan has yet to meet international standards and says he will work on that. Infantino says he also came today to watch the football match between South Sudan and Benin in Juba this evening. Chaburu Goch Alei, the president of the South Sudan Football Association, says the challenges facing professional football in South Sudan are huge.
Starting from the infrastructure, the training for referees and coaches and the national team support and a lot of things, actually. For us, we will work together with FIFA and CAF to see how we can start step by step implementing all the goal projects which are going to be approved by FIFA, and we will see the improvement, but we need time.
Alei is urging FIFA to provide financial support for developing football in South Sudan. Infantino, who holds dual nationality, Swiss and Italian, was elected FIFA president on February 26, beating controversial ASEAN Football Confederation president Sheikh Salma bin Ibrahim Al Khalifa in the second round of voting by 115 votes to 88. He has been the general secretary of UEFA since 2009. Infantino replaces his predecessor, Sepp Blatter. In May, U.S. prosecutors unsealed an indictment alleging a World Cup of fraud and arrested a number of senior executives on charges of money laundering and corruption. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
Thanks, Wake. And here's a sunny side of sports birthday shout-out for Gianni Infantino. The new FIFA president celebrated his 46th birthday in Juba. From Juba, let's go to Ghana's capital, Accra. That's where the Black Stars of Ghana will host the Mambas of Mozambique Thursday in another 2017 Nations Cup qualifier. Our friend in Accra, Kwabena Quicksilver Ofori, has this preview for us.
Black Stars coach Avram Grant, after naming a 23-man squad for the 2017 AFCON qualifier against Mozambique, began training with his team on Monday. The deputy captain, Andrew Dede Ayew, who is nursing an injury, is excluded from the squad, but Captain Asamoah Gyan, who is fully recovered from injury, joined the team's training from the start. Portland Timbers goalkeeper Adam Kwarase, after almost 2 years' absence, returns to take his position in the Black Stars. At a press conference at Accra Sports Stadium, the venue of the game, Coach Avram Grant explains his policy for the team.
The players need to convince me that they deserve to be in this squad. I don't convince any player. The days that Ghana beg for players to play, finished, as long as I'm here. They need to be proud that they are on the team. And I told you there is three criterions. One is quality, because we are playing football, not chess. Second, personality, good personality. And second, the desire to play for the national team. All the players that are here follow this criterion.
The return leg is scheduled for Maputo 3 days later. The Black Stars are on top of Group H with maximum 6 points from 2 matches played in the group, while Mozambique is lying on the bottom with no point after 2 games. For the Sunny Side of Sports, Kwabena Ofori in Accra.
Voice of America.
I heard the voice of America calling on my wavelength. Man was coming out of Frankfurt, Maine. I heard the voice of America calling on my wavelength. Singing, come back, baby, come back. Come back, baby, come back.
Our African football guru, David Legg, joins us again this evening for a look at recent African goal-scoring highlights in Europe.
Our African marksmen have been on target in the various top leagues in Europe. If we look, first of all, at the English Premier League, and the man that stood out was Riyad Mahrez, once again, the Algerian, playing for the shock leaders Leicester City. He scored the only goal away to Crystal Palace, a 1-0 victory that kept Leicester 5 points clear at the top. Another outstanding African in England was Sadio Mane, playing for Southampton. Now, Southampton were trailing Liverpool by 2-0. Mane came on as a half-time substitute, pulled 1 goal back. Then the Saints equalised, and then Mane scored the winner 4 minutes from time. So a great individual performance by him. We often say, Sonny, watch out for certain names. And let's say the same again to Alex Iwobi. He's a Nigerian who's playing for Arsenal. He's a teenager. He made his first start for Arsenal in the Premier League away to Everton. And he scored the second goal in a 2-0 victory. And I've got a hunch we're going to hear a lot more from that young man. Not so fortunate was Yaya Toure, the veteran Ivorian, playing for Manchester City. He came close a couple of times to scoring. He also set up Aguero for a chance that came back off the woodwork. But at the end of the day, Manchester City losing the Manchester derby 1-0 to Manchester United. The general feeling is that that is the end of their title challenge. A name we have been mentioning regularly, Sonny, in Spain is Cedric Bakambu from Villarreal, French-born, but plays for the Democratic Republic of Congo. And sure enough, he scored another goal, and it was against none other than Barcelona, as Villarreal came from 2 goals behind to draw with the arguably the greatest football club in the world at the moment. Mixed luck in another Spanish match for 2 players from Granada. Youssef El Arabi, the Moroccan, he scored in a 2-2 draw with Rayo Vallecano. And then a man with the name of Isaac Success, he's a Nigerian who also plays for Granada. Well, he had some success first because he was fouled in the penalty area and gave his club a chance to score from the penalty. But then, unfortunately, success turned to failure because the Nigerian was booked twice and got red carded. In Italy, Sonny, no goals for Mohamed Salah, the in-form Egyptian who plays for Roma this time round. And in Germany, there was a very good reason why Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, the reigning African Footballer of the Year, did not score. Sadly, his grandfather passed away. And Dortmund, I think, very realistically, understanding the trauma he was going through, they left him out of their match day squad. There was, however, an African goal in Germany. It was scored by the former Chelsea striker, Salomon Kalou, for Hertha Berlin in a 2-1 victory. And that was Kalou's 13th goal of the season. And he will be very happy with that, Sonny, because he set himself a target of 15 goals for the season. And I believe he's got enough matches left to certainly reach, if not beat, that target.
David, earlier you mentioned the Foxes of Leicester being 5 points clear at the top of the English Premier League. How about a look at the EPL table as well as that of Spain's La Liga?
Certainly, Sonny. Yes, the amazing story of Leicester City continues. There's now just 7 matches left, and they're 5 points ahead of Tottenham Hotspur, 66 points to 61. I'm still pinching myself, Sonny. I just can't quite get my head around the fact that we could be saying English Premier League champions, Leicester City. After all, this is a club who annually, their target, even this year, their manager Claudio Ranieri said the target was 40 points and survival. That's what they were thinking about, staying in the Premier League, avoiding relegation. And here we have this team with Riyad Mahrez of Algeria among their stars, now closing in on the title. It's not done and dusted, Sonny. Tottenham with 61 points could still catch them. I don't know if Arsenal can do it, though. They've got 55 points. Manchester City complete the top four at the moment with 51 points. Now, the fourth place is crucial because that is the last place for qualification for the UEFA Champions League. And breeding down the necks of City, you've got West Ham and Manchester United with 50 points each. And Southampton are not out of it either. They've got 47 points. So if United and West Ham and City slip up, you could see the Saints creeping into the top four. At the other end of the table, Sonny, I think Aston Villa are doomed. They're right down there at the bottom with just 16 points. But it's a real dogfight as to who's going to join them. 3 clubs in total go down. Newcastle have got 25 points. Sunderland 26 and Norwich 28. And you find that week by week, this situation changes. But Newcastle in particular, a very proud club, a very well-supported club in the northeast of England, are really struggling to get out of that bottom three. So you could have some real drama at the end of the season. Leicester winning the title and Newcastle United being relegated to the second division. Moving on to Spain, Sonny. And there, I think the situation is pretty cut and dried. At the weekend, Atletico Madrid lost, Real Madrid won. But really, it's a fight now between those two for second place. Barcelona are way out in front. They've got 76 points. Then you've got Atletico Madrid with 67 and Real Madrid with 66. And then in the fight for the fourth place, which of course means Champions League qualification, Villarreal have got 54. And Celta Vigo and Seville have got 48 each. But as far as the title is concerned, Sonny, I think it's done and dusted. You can put your $10 on Barcelona. Messi, Neymar, and Suarez. Nobody can stop them.
All right, I'll put my $10 on Barca, David.
Interestingly, Sonny, I'm just looking at the Barcelona scorers. Neymar did score against Villarreal, but Suarez and Messi, they had an off day.
Well, David, we all deserve a day off now and then, right? Thanks, David. That's David Legg, our African football guru, speaking with us once again from Johannesburg, South Africa. I encourage our Voice of America listeners to check out the Sunny Side of Sports blog. The address is blogs.voanews.com/sunny. Once again, that address, blogs.voanews.com/sunny. VOA's Rick Narciss is guest blogger for the latest post titled, Who is Kai Kamara? And Rick gives us a few answers in writing about the 31-year-old striker for Sierra Leone and Major League Soccer's Columbus Crew Club. Rick also asked Kai Kamara about his greatest achievement as a player.
It's really out there. It's really random. For soccer, definitely, you know, greatest achievement has to be, you know, just becoming a professional soccer player. You know, I came into America at the age of 16. I said to myself, by the age of 19, I wanted to go to college, which I did. And then by the age of 21, I want to play professional soccer, which I did. So all those are just, you know, really, really good achievement. And obviously, then later on, making another goal for myself, saying I want to play in England, which I did, playing for Norwich. And so it's amazing. But achievement in life, I have to, you know, say right now, it's you know, having my little girl, you know, having the child last year was definitely one of the greatest achievements I've had.
How did that change your life? Did that change your perspective on things a little bit, having your first child?
It does. It's a beautiful thing. Obviously, growing up in Africa, we all know all our families are really big, you know, having extended family or just, you know, near family. But definitely when you have your child of your own, everything changes, you know, become humble to it. And for me, it's a girl. So they say when you have a girl, you treat her like a princess. And that's what I'm doing. And she gets the best part of me, you know, the soft side of me. It's good to on the field, off the field, because it keeps me grounded. It keeps me more rest, you know, off the field, because I'm home most of the time and spending time with her. And so when I'm ready to get back on the field, then I'm always ready.
That's Kai Kamara, the subject of the latest Sunny Side of Sports blog post. And Kai was talking with VOA's Rick Narciss from Columbus, Ohio. My VOA colleague Jeffrey Young has been talking with Ben Nichols, spokesman for the World Anti-Doping Agency, WADA, in Montreal, Canada. Jeff brought up the case of Russian tennis star Maria Sharapova, who earlier this month revealed she failed a drug test at the 2016 Australian Open. Sharapova admitted to testing positive for meldonium, a drug that was added to WADA's list of banned substances at the beginning of this year. Sharapova was provisionally suspended by the International Tennis Federation March 12th. Jeffrey Young read a passage from Forbes magazine to Ben Nichols. The case of Maria Sharapova embodies a facet of the performance-enhancing drugs debate that we don't discuss much. Punishment for taking these drugs is incremental, while the benefits are exponential. They're orders of magnitude apart, and until we correct that imbalance, it seems inevitable that mainstream stars will continue to succumb to the call of these performance-enhancing drugs and invariably get caught on a very regular basis. Jeff asked Ben Nichols for his reaction.
I can fully appreciate that point of view. I would tackle that by saying we have addressed this issue. As the World Anti-Doping Agency, we operate a global set of rules run by all sports and all countries called the World Anti-Doping Code. The revised World Anti-Doping Code came into play at the start of 2015, so last year. That code brought in stronger sanctions for first-time offences. So we moved from two-year sanctions to four-year sanctions for a standard doping offence. That is a significant step forward to deter people from doping. What I would say is some people have called for lifetime bans. The reality with that is we know that such a ban would not hold up in the court of law. We've had significant legal opinion from the European Court of Human Rights who have said that would not be proportionate to the crime of a doping offence. So we have moved forward to a standard four-year sanction, and that can be lessened depending on the specific circumstances of the case. So we are addressing this risk versus reward argument very seriously.
There has been a phenomenon in the last 20 years called designer drugs in terms of sport. The people who make these substances say, well, if this exact compound is illegal, what can we take from this compound that provides the benefit that we're looking for and change the formulation slightly so that it's outside of the bounds of what is prohibited? Designer PEDs. What about that?
Yeah, I'm very aware of this ongoing issue, if you like. We have a constant battle to keep up with the cheats, and people are aware of that. They call it a cat and mouse game. We have science evolving, but we have cheats looking for new ways to beat the system the whole time. That's one of the reasons we work closely with the pharmaceutical industry so that if substances which are designed for medical purposes and not for athlete enhancement, if pharmaceutical companies such as Pfizer, who we work closely with, if they become aware of something which they think might be of interest to athletes looking to cheat the system, they advise us and we can help develop a test. So we're working with other partners, leading pharmaceutical organisations, to continually try and keep up with these athletes looking to cheat. We're faced with sport today, a very competitive sporting world where people are looking to gain an edge. There's a huge amount of money at stake. There is a criminal underworld at play here, and we have to try and keep up with this. We have to try and advance science, but we have other means such as investigations. We have a huge amount of tools at our disposal to try and catch athletes. It's not just urine and blood testing.
That's Ben Nichols, spokesman for the World Anti-Doping Agency. And Ben was talking with VOA's Jeffrey Young from Montreal, Canada. Joining us once again on the sunny side of sports is Andrew Palcheski, the Voice of America's social media reporter. Sporty greetings, Andrew.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. Good to be with you.
Andrew, what's trending in the sports world on this Wednesday?
Well, we have two more sports stories connected to the attacks in Brussels that happened yesterday. One is Mourad Lachraoui. He's the brother of one of the suspected attackers. And it turns out he's actually a Taekwondo star in Belgium. He's represented the country in some Taekwondo competitions. He's a very esteemed athlete, and he's come out now and said that he and his family have disowned his brother and don't condone his attacks. But an interesting sports connection there.
Any other sports connections to the Brussels terror?
There is. Dikembe Mutombo, of course, famous NBA player, was actually in the Brussels airport when the attack occurred. Thankfully, he wasn't injured. In fact, he took to social media in the immediate aftermath to tell everyone, I was in the airport, but I'm okay, I'm safe. He was traveling to the Congo for part of his foundation and some of the work that they do, and obviously wasn't able to make that trip after the attack. But he did alert his social media followers. And again, this is something I've talked about on other shows here at Voice of America. Social media in the aftermath of this attack has been a valuable tool for people to communicate and to signal that they're okay in the aftermath of this attack.
Andrew, one quick Mutombo airport story. I actually met him 6 years ago at Johannesburg Airport at the conclusion of the 2010 FIFA World Cup. Mutombo had his whole family with him, and they went to a few matches.
Were they all as tall as he is?
Not quite as tall as Dikembe.
He's 7'2". That's got to be, I don't know how many meters that is. At least 2 meters and more.
He's a big man.
Yes, he is for sure.
What else is trending, Andrew?
Well, they had this major competition yesterday in Cuba between the Major League Baseball Tampa Bay Rays and the Cuban national team. President Obama, of course, was in attendance for that during his trip to Cuba. And I'm looking on social media, and some of the pictures are just amazing. The stadium is chock full. It was a really exciting game, a lot of energy. People are reporting, a lot of the journalists, they're tweeting out pictures. The Tampa Bay Rays tweeting some things out, Major League Baseball tweeting out some photos of President Obama, of Major League Baseball's Commissioner Rob Manfred talking to the teams. So really, a baseball diplomacy, if you will, having these two teams compete. Now, the Tampa Bay Rays won 4-1, beating the Cuban national team. But a lot of people speculating on social media, this may not be the last time we see baseball in Cuba. Maybe MLB moving a team down there at some point.
Interesting.
And having, it's a lot closer than, people have speculated moving a team to Puerto Rico, for instance. Cuba would be a little bit closer than that. So it's interesting speculation. We'll see if it pans out.
And in terms of that baseball diplomacy, there's also talk that maybe we'll see more Cuban players in the major leagues.
Definitely. And that's a big part of the easing of the embargoes and the blockades between the U.S. and Cuba. A lot of times in the past, the only way that Cuban players would be able to get to the U.S. to play would either be to defect or to flee the country and have to travel across the Straits of Florida. Now it might be a little easier process for them to do that. So there's a lot of talent in Cuba, a lot of great Cuban players in Major League Baseball right now, and there could be even more. And hence the speculation for a team in Cuba. They're saying, well, we have all these teams down there. Maybe we could have some players down there.
Andrew Palcheski, the Voice of America's social media reporter. Thank you, Andrew.
Thank you.
And we'll see you on Thursday.
Sounds good.
And that wraps up the March 23rd edition of The Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger, VOA engineer Cornelius Tenner, and thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, And that's the sunny side of sports.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
United States Ambassador to Cameroon, Michael Hoza, underscored the importance of transparency and strong institutions as he joined 20 ministers of the government of the Republic of Cameroon this month at an anti-corruption forum in Yaoundé. On March 2nd, the minister in charge of the Supreme State Audit Office, Ms. Emba Acha Fomundum Rose, opened the Pan-African Conference on the Prevention of and Fight Against Fraud and the Misappropriation of Public Funds, where she called for the elimination of corruption and the promotion of good governance and transparency. In his remarks, Ambassador Hoza said, preventing and fighting fraud and the misappropriation of public funds is vital for the development of Cameroon. The United States has learned its own lessons on this subject throughout our history, and we learned that building strong institutions was essential to combat corruption. We are still learning. Ambassador Hoza further noted that this is not a struggle that is alien to America. That is why we believe it is essential to share lessons learned. Corruption steals directly from the pockets of citizens, be they American or Cameroonian, or from anywhere else in the world for that matter. To truly make a nation's economy flourish and for its potential to be unleashed, said Ambassador Hoza, corruption must be reduced and eliminated. Otherwise, corruption is one of the key guarantees that the cycle of poverty continues for nations. The ambassador also observed, "Make no mistake, the public is always watching and judging public officials. Perceptions can equal realities to them, and therefore public opinion and freedom of the press matter, and it matters a lot for all democracies." The United States has been partnering with Cameroon in anti-corruption efforts for the past 10 years, sharing experience and strengthening partnerships with key institutions and citizens. Over the past 3 years, U.S.-Cameroon cooperation against the misappropriation of public funds has increased through collaboration with the Ministries of Public Contracts, Finance, and Justice, and also with specialized agencies such as the Public Contracts Regulatory Agency and the National Agency for Financial Investigation. The United States is proud to stand with its partner Cameroon and other African nations to help those nations guarantee the integrity and transparency that good government demands.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Next time on Straight Talk Africa. We will discuss the Benin presidential election. Tune in to Straight Talk Africa Wednesday at 18:30 UTC on VOA Africa.
What's happening, Africa? This is Jackson Bungani in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Nadia Sami in Johannesburg, South Africa. Thank you for joining us on Upfront each Wednesday, 17:30 UTC, for a lively discussion on issues that are topical, challenging, and always engaging.
The show tries to capture that fundamentally aspirational nature of today's African youth. As you've noticed, right here on the show, we talk about everything. Nothing is off the table.
I am a social networker, often online. For me, it's all about making connections, meeting people.
Ooh, without my family, I don't think I would have been here today because they gave me a lot of support morally.
And AU, African Union, can these people really solve this nonsense of rigging election, brutality during what election violence, all this whatever?
Employment rates are climbing, so definitely there's less jobs in the market now.
Remember to connect with us on Facebook and on Twitter at Upfront Africa.
When news breaks, VOA News is there. VOA. Around the clock, listen to VOA newscasts on the top of each hour, along with our detailed news shows and analysis.
VOA News. We're online at voanews.com.
At voanews.com.
VOA.com.
VOA, your trusted source of news and information.